Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine is at about 50%, and I'll tell you why. I have a tendency to overcommit. I want to help with everything I can possibly help with. I want to do everything I can possibly do. I want to be with people, and I forget that at the end of the day, I am an introvert, and I really need time to recharge and take care of myself. Therapy gives me important tools to do that, to recognize what's going on, to understand my battery and where it is and why it's there and what I can do to recharge. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/pantsuit. So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first mani system.
Tensions are mounting in China ahead of the G7 summit and within the House GOP caucus.
We discuss these tensions and the concept of negative capability and language as privilege.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance.
Welcome to another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We hit our goal of 500 patrons on Patreon. Woohoo!
Thank you everyone who stepped up to be part of supporting Pantsuit Politics. If you still want to get bonus episodes, the Nightly Nuance Monday through Thursday, and which is an 8 to 10 minute podcast every single day, Monday through Thursday, about what's going on in the world, you can head over to patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics. We are very, very encouraged by all of the support and excited to continue to grow the show.
Also, shout out to Beth for doing most of the Nightly Nuance. If you have an idea of what you think would be a good Nightly Nuance topic, send those on.
Yes, please.
We were on the struggle bus yesterday.
If you are tired of hearing me talk about Supreme Court and other court decisions, just give me some new things to work with. But I do tend to default to, let's talk about lawyerly things.
Mm. So today we wanted to talk about a lot of news stories in which we see tensions rising. It seems to me, Beth, that all these stories represent what I like to call, I didn't coin this phrase, I think it came from Pixar or Joseph Campbell or somebody in the tradition of storytelling, which is the messy middle, which is a high tension part of the story. And it seems like in a lot of areas, it's including and especially foreign policy, we are in the messy middle.
Can I be a little woo-woo for a second?
Yeah.
And tell you that I've been talking with my therapist about how it feels like the whole earth is experiencing that this is a
Absolutely.
Universal condition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching that footage out of Guatemala and Hawaii with the volcanoes,
mm-hmm.
I just feel like my therapist's phrase was that the earth is groaning.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where we are in the arc right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have the North Korean summit that was canceled. It's back on. How soon was it before he brought it back after he canceled it? Less than a week?
Yes, it was less than a week. It was like whiplash. We had just talked about how it was canceled and then it was back on.
Oh, whatever. So it's back on, but he's very cagey, he being President Trump. Apparently, there was did you read about the FEMA meeting in which he went off on very, very, very random tangents about lots of things completely not related to FEMA?
And there were no hurricane discussion, apparently,
no.
at the FEMA meeting, which is what the FEMA meeting was supposed to be about.
Right. And so he talked about North Korea. I don't know. Who knows? It'll happen. We'll see. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't happen. I don't know. I think that's pretty much a direct quote.
Well, and the reporting that everyone's kind of obsessing about in relation to the meeting is that it's going to be sort of like Celebrity Apprentice International Relations Edition, because Dennis Rodman is going to be there and Sean Hannity is going to be there. You know, I am much more interested in what's happening on the North Korean side in preparations for this summit. I also think that this story intersects with something we've been texting about all morning, Sarah, and what is happening with our diplomats in China, because China's role in however this shakes out is going to be pivotal.
Mm-hmm. China is a key ally. I don't know if ally is quite the right word for North Korea. And obviously, we have a very complicated relationship with China. So this story starts a little bit further back. There were, I don't know what to call them, except for maybe sonic attacks. I don't know. Several months ago in Cuba, 24 diplomats and their families became victims of a weird, I don't know what other word to use it. That's not a very official term, but it's weird. Medical attack issue, physical ailment in which there seems to be some sort of injury to the brain, but no associated head trauma, which left them with all manner of side effects, hearing loss, loss of balance, things that you would associate with head trauma. So we expelled Cuban diplomats as a reaction to these attacks that really haven't been explained. We don't understand what happened. We don't understand who did them. And then now we're seeing very similar physical ailments from a lot of our staff in Guangzhou, China.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people this impacts. We know that at least four foreign service workers are coming home from Guangzhou, and that they are that includes like the foreign service worker and a spouse. The 3-year-old child is having these symptoms. They describe the noise in different ways. Some people say it sounds like cicadas. Some people say it sounds like marbles rolling around in a funnel. And the terms, we're struggling with language on this. So are the articles. You know, mm-hmm. they'll talk about it as mysterious. I think someone associated with the situation in Cuba said that this is just paranoia and hysteria and nothing real is going on. But there are real medical impacts being found, and they're varying too, as you can imagine. But the sense now is that if this is happening in China, and there were allusions in both the Washington Post and New York Times articles, I think, to the suspicion that there are isolated incidences of this happening to other foreign service workers throughout the world. And so now there is the possibility that another state actor is responsible. Like, this could be the work of Russians. It could be the work of the Chinese government. We don't know. But it is a very mysterious thing. And I find this this seems to me like the stuff of Hitchcock films.
That's what,
in
exactly
our time.
What I said. So this sounds like a movie. It's so terrifying. And, you know, there's a lot of people on Twitter who are sort of saying there could be other explanations for this. It could be something to do with the equipment we use in our diplomatic areas to protect our communications, to sort of block signals. It could be the impact of new machinery we're using. I don't know. The location of both of these attacks is so suspect. If it was machinery we're using across the world and it popped up in, you know, Monaco, then yeah, maybe we could talk about it. But this is just the locations and the size, the amount of people affected, although I think it is even more terrifying to think that there could be many more people affected that we just don't know about yet. It's I think it's really scary.
And there seems to be a sense among some of the Foreign Service workers that this hasn't been taken seriously enough, quickly enough, and that information hasn't been as transparent as it needs to be about this. It does sound like Secretary Pompeo is taking this very seriously and wants to avoid people believing that this is being mishandled. I think he thinks that this wasn't taken seriously enough in relation to Cuba and is trying to press forward, and I commend him on that. We ask so much of people doing this work overseas, and the least we can do is hear them out when they say, I'm being essentially, you know, slowly poisoned by noise. I mean, that's how I read it. We just can't have this happening to our folks, whether it is the result of our own equipment or of a foreign power. We need to take this very seriously. And I am happy that Secretary Pompeo seems to be doing that.
So continuing our theme of tensions rising, the G7 meeting is coming up. It will be taking place in Quebec. That is Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Not surprisingly, it is being watched very closely, and there are rising tensions due to the president's placing of tariffs on steel and aluminum with many of our ally countries included in the G7. I read this morning that President Macron of France and perhaps Prime Minister Merkel of Germany have said that they would not sign on to the G7 statement unless some progress could be made with regards to the tariffs, with regards to Iran, and perhaps the Paris Climate Accord. I don't know what other choice we've given these countries except for to gang up against us. I'm just going to be really honest.
There's a great piece in The Atlantic that I posted on Twitter this morning and we'll share in the show notes about all of the tension arising here and about how these European leaders and Justin Trudeau have really tried to meet the president where he is. They have tried to play golf. They have, you know, cozied up to him. They have flattered him. And in
they
give
him that big fancy parade in France.
That's right. In every respect that matters to them, the United States has screwed them over, essentially. And it also says that at the preview meeting for the G7, the finance ministers met in British Columbia last Saturday. And Japan's counterpart to Steve Mnuchin said that he actually felt sorry for Steve Mnuchin because people were so angry about the U.S. tariffs. And then he added, but I guess it's not the sort of issue I should sympathize with. But I wanted to read, I think this is really significant. I wanted to read this. This is actually from the G7 chair's summary of last Saturday's meeting.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready. Our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipseastories.com/pantsuit.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting. I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved, it's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit.
Over 2 days of discussion, G7 finance ministers and central bank governors engaged on a range of topics, including the importance of rules-based international trade and ways of ensuring that economic growth works for everyone. G7 finance ministers and central bank governors agreed that when they work together, the G7 can build on strong interpersonal and economic relationships to advance our common goals. Concerns were expressed that the tariffs imposed by the United States on its friends and allies on the grounds of national security undermine open trade and confidence in the global economy. Finance ministers and central bank governors requested that the United States Secretary of the Treasury communicate their unanimous concern and disappointment.
Wow.
I mean, that is some strong language coming out of the G7.
I'm really frustrated right now because it feels like the tensions are rising, but we're doing what we always do, which is get distracted by the shiny objects and the, you know, whether or not people should kneel or stand or come to the White House or not. And that his, for some ungodly reason, approval ratings seem to keep going up. And I don't know if it's the strong economy. I don't know if it's not a clear and present threat. But I like to believe that eventually Americans as a group will look around and see what's happening with our relationship with the world. It's so concerning and it's so dangerous and it's such a threat to our ongoing prosperity and security and growth. And just because everything is not terrible right now, especially with regards to the economy, I don't know why we can't see the long-term impact of this posture and having something as terrible, in my opinion, as the other countries in the G7 using that kind of language against us.
Well, and you mentioned last time we talked about this that gaps get filled, and that's happening. Vladimir Putin is visiting European capitals to press for closer trade relations and for a united front on the Iranian nuclear agreement.
Oh, my gosh.
And China is stepping in with commitments on emissions reduction to show that it is a player in the Paris Accords. China and Russia are going to use our missteps to increase their standing in the world.
Yep.
That's what's happening.
Yep. It's so frustrating. I posted on Twitter this really great quote, and it just made me think about how we're reacting to all this generally. I heard it actually on Oprah Super Soul Sunday. It was a podcast about Buddhism. It was very good. Highly recommend it. I'll put it in the show notes. But it said, fear is the cheapest room in the house. I would like to see you living in better conditions. You know, if we want to just close, like you said, the security concerns are what? We are closed off. Like, we're only safe if we allow nothing in. And, you know, with regards to, we're going to talk about the House debate regarding immigration. But immigration generally, the way the president talks about it, the way he talks about, oh, Democrats only want illegal immigrants. I mean, just the incendiary language, the idea that we'll just close ourselves off from the rest of the world and remain a global leader. Or maybe people just don't want us to be a global leader anymore. I don't understand that either. That's such a foreign concept to me that America wouldn't be a leader in the world. But maybe that's not what people want. I don't know.
I don't know how to unpack that, because I think if you pull the average person, I think they might say, I don't want to be a global leader in terms of having our military everywhere. I agree with that. And they might say, I don't want to be a global leader in terms of sending all this foreign aid to different countries. I don't agree with that. I think they might also say, but I want what America does to matter. I want to still be the greatest nation on earth.
Doesn't work like that.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, I sense that maybe popular sentiment about making America great again, and even people who aren't in sort of that hardened Trump base, but just the average person probably has a really philosophically inconsistent perspective on what America's place in the world should be. And I don't want to stand in judgment of that, because we all care about different things at different times for different reasons and can't stay focused on these issues constantly. And to me, this is where trust comes in, and rebuilding institutional trust is critical, because at some point we need a president who can sit down. I was actually talking with a friend of mine about this the other day, and we were talking about how we really wish that our military engagement across the world could come way down. Mm-hmm. And I said, here's my not nuanced take on that. That will not happen until we have a woman in the Oval Office. Mm-hmm. Because it is going to require an unbelievable level of moral courage. And also, it's going to take someone who can sit down with the American people and explain what we're doing and why. And I just think that that is bringing sort of the mothering leadership characteristic that the country needs right now. I don't think it'll happen otherwise. So I get why the average person might have a confused platform on this. I do not understand the president and the administration having a confused platform on it. And it seems to me that President Trump wants to talk about every world leader as his best pal while he is stabbing them in the back, mm-hmm. at the long-term expense of our economy and our alliances across the globe.
Yeah, I saw where he was complaining about Justin Trudeau and Macron. And I don't want to be lectured to. Well, then stop acting like a child and people will stop trying to lecture to you. Like, stop acting like there's no give and take in a relationship and people will stop treating you like that. Like, I posted on Facebook that I think parenting is saying in a million different times in a million different ways, you are not the only person on planet Earth. Adjust accordingly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know if anybody's ever said that to him. Like, you're not the only person here. Your priorities are not the only priorities. Your ideas are not the only ideas. It's so frustrating. It's just so frustrating to see him taking the same approach. It's not surprising. It's never become surprising, because at this point we know who he is. But it sure as heck never stops being frustrating.
It'll be interesting to see what Republicans in particular do as these tariffs start to take root and we see the effects of them. Because I think right now, a lot of Republicans' message is, look away mm-hmm. from the drama. The economy's doing great. So many jobs. you're taking home more money in your paycheck. And when people in small businesses cannot get access to steel that they need to do their work, mm-hmm. or when the prices of gas, milk, whatever, start to go way up, the look over here is going to be a lot harder.
Yep. Well, speaking of Republican leadership, Republican politicians, their moderates in the House have joined with Democrats for a petition to bring debate without needing the Republican leadership's permission, basically, to a whole host of immigration issues. And I think reading some of the statements of these moderate Republicans are really encouraging, honestly. They just say, you know, people want us to do our job. They want an answer on DACA. They want us to legislate, and we need to do that. I mean, many, many, many of the things that we say on this podcast all the time. So the movement itself, I think, is very encouraging. They're only three signatures away as we record on Thursday. They're having a meeting in an attempt to reach a compromise, which I find highly unlikely, not only because they've been trying to reach a compromise between the Freedom Caucus and moderates and Democrats for a very long time, but I don't see how you pull 200 people in a room and try to get that compromise done after Paul Ryan's PowerPoint. Like, I think that's unlikely. I also think the moderates have nothing to gain by compromising at this point. So it's nice to see a sort of a mini moderate revolution forming in the House of Representatives, I gotta say.
Well, and it's not just the moderates. You know, the Freedom Caucus is pretty entrenched. They tanked mm-hmm. the farm bill over this. And I will say for both sides of that, you know, the prevailing narrative and reporting about this seems to be that, like, the two extremes in the party, because now the moderates are considered extreme, right? Mm-hmm. So the moderates and the Freedom Caucus types, the two extremes, are pushing this horrible direction. I commend both of those extremes for saying, let's just stand up and be counted. Let's go on record as to where we are.
I agree.
Let's put these bills out and vote on them and then see what the Senate does. And Politico has described this whole thing as a PR stunt, essentially, because there is so little chance of any legislation that actually gets passed by both chambers and signed by the president. But you know what? I think it's still worthwhile. I totally agree with the people saying we should do our jobs.
Yep. I remember when I worked in the Senate and I would go and take tours of the floor. And people, there would be like one lone senator talking to an empty room. And I thought, if I'm ever in charge and I'm ever party leadership, I'm just going to say, you know what, guys, we're just going to stand. We're going to show up and do our jobs. Instead of being in the corridors, talking to the press, raising money and talking to lobbyists, we're going to come down here on the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate and be counted and say what we want instead of to a room and debate and actually use this body in the way it is intended. You know, there's something so charming about the British Parliament and the way they sort of just kind of yell over each other and get into it. I mean, I think we could use a little bit of that.
I agree. And I am very interested to see if they can get out of this, because I really hope that this meeting just doesn't work and they have to vote.
I do too.
What else are they going to learn about immigration that's going to change where people are? Mm-hmm. And so in advance of an election, tell the public where you are. And then the public can look at that and decide who we're going to elect in the midterms.
Well, and I think if you look at the results in the primaries in California, New Jersey, Iowa, you see a shout back to what you were just mentioning about a mothering form of leadership. I think the main takeaway from all these is women, 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 women. I think women, people want to see new faces in positions of power, and many times they're female faces. So hopefully that this moderate movement will be joined by lots of female voices come November.
Not mad about that.
Not mad about that. Not mad at all.
Sarah, you wanted to talk about a concept called negative capability that I have a feeling will connect nicely with many of the topics we've been discussing.
Yes. So I am reading Michael Pollan's book on psychedelics. And y'all, I'm just going to be talking about a lot because there's so many fascinating things in this book. And when we were talking about the messy middle and tensions rising, I mean, there's an argument in this book that psychedelics could really help some of this. But he was talking about in the book that there's this idea of negative capability. And it's a concept that comes from writing. And the concept is that people who have the capacity for negative capability are better writers because they're not trying to come to an easy conclusion. It was Keats that formed this, and he was specifically referring to Shakespeare. The ability to exist amid uncertainties, mysteries, doubt without reaching for absolute, whether these are those of science or spirituality. And he was making the argument that that's what makes good drama. That's what makes good literature. But I think that's just something we need in everything right now, not just art and writing and creativity, but creativity in politics and policy and business. And this idea of abandoning the linear way of thinking, of abandoning speaking in absolutes or in this sort of zero-sum equation in which there are winners and losers and that's the end of that's all she wrote. I think it's something we've sort of been talking about a lot on this podcast, and I just really enjoyed seeing a word or words given to this concept that let's just have the ability to stay in the messy middle and look at the tensions without trying to reach a conclusion. I think that's what we talk about a lot here and on The Nuanced Life when you talk about a choice or you talk about an idea and everybody feels judged. That's a lack of negative capability. You can listen to somebody else's position and not immediately come to a place of defensiveness. You can rest in uncomfortable truths, Bill Clinton, and not have to come down on one side or the other.
It reminds me of something that I learned, I think, in an RA training, which is probably one of the best trainings for life I've ever had. Mm. You learn to be an RA in college. But I think it was there that we talked about how one of the best measurements of maturity is your comfort level with ambiguity.
Yes. We had a really beautiful email from a listener that was talking about dealing with difficult situations in her life. And she said, we want to sort of firm up and grasp tighter when we're in situations where we don't have a lot of control. And I think that's where you see that you can either lean into this negative capability. And she's had this beautiful phrase where she says, we can't always choose what happens to us, but we can choose how we react. And I thought that was such a wise way to put it. Like that's the mature approach to ambiguity, right? Is saying, okay, well, I don't know. I don't know the best path forward. I don't know the right answer. I don't know if there is a right answer. But I do know that I can be comfortable with this ambiguity. I can lean in. I can develop my negative capability and just say that we're going to stay here in the I don't know, and we're going to figure that out, and we're going to look at these difficult, complex situations without picking sides and declaring winners and losers.
I had that reaction to an email that we got from Kyla about our conversation near the end of Tuesday's podcast when we were talking about developing greater relationships with each other as a key to resolving complex problems like income inequality. And Kyla said, I really appreciate this focus on relationships, but how is a giant country like the United States, how are we supposed to develop relationships among 300 million people? And I thought, I don't know. And I think that requires some combination of policy, judicial decision, neighborhood work, community work, strengthening mm-hmm. institutions so that there are more places. You know, church isn't the answer for everyone, but I think churches have a very critical role to play that they frankly aren't playing very well right now. Mm-hmm. Some of them are doing amazing things, but on the whole, I think damage to that institution has damaged our society. Mm-hmm. And so I think it has to be a combination. And I don't know exactly what set of tools we're supposed to bring to those problems, but I'm okay with that. I want us to just try and yeah. have some priorities and some values in that process as we march forward. The last thing we wanted to talk about today quickly is a conversation that I had with Dante, which connected with a couple of other things that Sarah and I have been talking about this week. Dante was saying to me that the president's use of Twitter, grammatical mistakes, spelling errors, random capitalization, strange uses of scare quotes, is really privileged because think about whether the reaction when you criticize that from some people becomes, well, you know what he means.
Ugh.
Stop nitpicking, you know. And I have that reaction to people who are obsessed with grammar in the commons, right? Like I don't like it when somebody posts something on Facebook and someone comments with a real finger wagging grammar lesson. Because I do think, can we give each other some space here? You know what the person meant. It's not that I don't value grammar. I just think that that's a little over the top. But this is the president of the United States. And we have at least one federal court judge who is saying the president's Twitter use is an official proclamation now, such that he can't block people on Twitter because he's using it in a way that makes it a pronouncement of the president. Now, I disagree with that opinion, but that's another show. And Dante's point was, can you imagine if the president were using slang, especially slang particular to a racial or ethnic group, or broken English, or if President Obama made errors like this, especially errors that corresponded to like hip hop kind of slang, that it's really a privilege to have people say, oh, you know what he meant. And I thought that was interesting.
I think that might sometimes when I'm feeling a lot of frustration towards President Trump, I think that might be his most sort of genius use of public relations. And I think it's what he meant when he said, I could choose someone in Times Square and some people wouldn't get mad. He has crafted this space, this persona in which everything can be blown off. You can't ever attack him. He can have controversies that would have seemed to tank any other presidency, from the Russia investigation to Stormy Daniels to all these things, because he's so slippery. It's just everything is, well, you knew how he is. It's almost like in owning his true nature from the beginning, he removed it as a line of attack. And I think that is a very privileged sort of strategy to say, yeah, well, I told you what I was going to do. I told you who I was. So you can't be mad about it. You hear that from people all the time. Well, yeah, that's just who he is on Twitter. Just ignore it. And it's so frustrating. Do we have, you know, and it's frustrating, I think, particularly as someone from the left who felt like, you know, for decades it was the right was the moral authority. We have to have standards. We have to have values. It's so important to stick up for our values as Americans, to see this man as his face who has no values. And when you point that out, it's like, yeah, but that's who he is. So just roll your eyes and blow it off and laugh it off.
And I think that is a privilege to mm-hmm. create the benefit of the doubt for yourself all the time, to insulate yourself
yep.
from all criticism. I'm not sure that we would give that to anybody who isn't an older white guy who'd been incredibly successful economically. There's just a lot. There's kind of a bubble built around him and lots of layers to that bubble. And I think Dante has a really great point that even the rules of language don't apply to Donald Trump.
Yep.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never-frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed, it's so flavorful, the sauces are delicious, and Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code PANTSUIT50 at factormeals.com/PANTSUIT50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Hold up. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, and we've had some other interesting conversations about language. We've had several pieces of feedback over the last few months about our use of the word girlfriends to describe our close female friends. Kiri wrote and said, as a queer woman, I feel that heterosexuals using the term girlfriend to refer to platonic friendships invalidates or lessens the seriousness of romantic relationships between queer women. If you instead call your girlfriends your friends, I'm sure all listeners will still know exactly what you're talking about. Thanks for the nuance. We've actually had this feedback before. And I said, I struggle because friends is not strong enough for sometimes what I'm talking about with girlfriends. And girlfriends to me is like, I don't know if I would describe one of my queer friend's partners as a girlfriend because that feels very juvenile. Girlfriend, boyfriend sounds like a very sort of juvenile term. So I think my first thing is, does anybody have any better words that we could use here? Does anybody figured out a better way to talk about close female friends and or queer partners? Because I would love to hear it because I think we have a linguistic struggle here.
I think it's a linguistic struggle. I also am realizing more and more, and this is in reaction to this feedback and lots of others on lots of different topics, I instinctually go to, but I have this question, or but I feel not understood in this conversation. And I'm starting to recognize that the best thing for me to do is just to say, okay, and kind of go to, I'm going to treat people as they want to be treated, not as I think that I would want to be treated in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kiri's message, I read it and I just stopped and I thought, okay, that is my new rule. I will not use that word about women in my life with whom I have platonic friendships. Because Kiri is the expert of how she experiences that term, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I always say, right? The most harmful, I think, thing we do is acting like we're expert in each other's experiences. I'm the expert in your life. And I did think when we talked about this before that sometimes I use the word sister friend. So maybe that's a good better term to use. Instead of just
like
friend,
sister friend.
Okay, we're using sister friend.
That's beautiful.
We've decided sister friend.
Well, and there aren't good words when some of your closest friends are men. How do you describe that as a woman? Or how would a man describe a close personal friendship?
We could totally do brother platonic. Friend. Brother friend?
I like brother friend. Sister friend and brother friend. Done.
Done.
We solved something today.
Yes. I love fall solving things.
This conversation about language reminds me of one more thing we wanted to talk about quickly, which is the tragic death of Kate Spade. And some of the commentary around her death, and you posted a really fantastic Twitter thread from Farai Chidea. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. And she makes the point that the language used in writing about Kate Spade's death, particularly from unbelievable number of think pieces from the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that this is important, but this seemed like a lot. The language in it is really the kind of coded gatekeeping language of economic privilege. And people are writing about this as though, like, there was a time when you walked down the street and everybody had a Kate Spade purse. And she was like, I didn't. And I walked down lots of streets where I never saw one of those purses.
Yeah, that was Anna Wintour in New York Times, notoriously not sensitive to her own privilege.
And it was a good reminder, I think, of how no one's intention was to write that and to say the only people who matter are people who could afford Kate Spade bags. But that is how it's heard. And instead of being defensive about that, this takes me back to the point I was trying to make about girlfriends. I just need to be quiet and listen and hear that and say, okay, I'm not the expert of everything. And also, I'm not entitled to speak in any way I damn well please and expect other people to hear it, assuming my best intentions. Mm-hmm. And that's what the president does, right? He expects everybody to hear it, assuming the best of his intentions, always giving him the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not entitled to that. And so when someone tells me something about race or sexuality or gender or economic privilege, what does it hurt for me to listen to that and say, okay, you're the expert on your experience of my language, and I value you enough to adjust my language as a result?
Yeah, I thought what was so, so smart about this particular Twitter thread is she talks about how we use language. The sense of belonging cues throughout the piece on Spey do not just talk about her life. They are more about defining the reader audience and setting up a sense of belonging cues that definitely don't include readers like me. Two pull quotes, this one from the writers, good girls got them for their bat mitzvahs and the bad girls swiped them. And then the one from Anna Wintour, there was a moment when you couldn't walk a block in New York without seeing one of her bags. And here's the thing about language. And I will give a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here, because I think what people are all these this coming of age, what I think is important to talk about with Kate Spade and her legacy is that she did breach this gap of luxury brands. I think she was not because it was I think coming of age is the wrong term, although, hey, listen, the first expensive purse I got in college, literally when I was coming of age, was a Kate Spade bag that I still own. Is that she did something economically, market-wise, that had not been done in that way. And she did. She created a new brand that was luxury, but approachable for many, many people. Not everyone. Absolutely not. But language and the importance about precision in language is not using your privileged experience to try to convey that through emotion, but to use the precision of language without depending on those sense of belongings to convey why her life and what her legacy is. I think that's an important thing to convey. But if you work for the New York Times, try a little harder instead of just depending on the bubble of your New York experience to reach the people you know are like you reading the story. That's what would have been the right thing to do, a much harder thing to do. But I think that it's important. I think that is an important thing she accomplished. And an important thing to write about. But to just use, like she said, those emotional cues playing on your own privileged experience is not the smart way and not a good way, honestly, to serve Kate Spade's legacy. But to use language in a more precise way that acknowledges the diversity of experience of everyone reading the New York Times or living in New York, like that's harder. But, you know, try harder. And I say that to ourselves, too. We have to do that, too.
That's right. I shared this on my personal Twitter feed, and I want to be sure to say it here. I took this really hard. When I started practicing law, I allowed myself every year during the Kate Spade sample sale to purchase one item. Mm-hmm. I never bought one at retail. Mm-hmm. And I understand that Kate Spade was long off on a new adventure from that company by the time I started buying those bags. Her imprint was permanent on that brand, and I always experienced shopping that sample sale like being in the mind of someone who was truly happy. That's really how I thought about it. You know, someone who turned insects into earrings and bags that felt like they were meant to go to the farmer's market to buy strawberries. I mean, I just loved the aesthetic and what I thought the aesthetic represented. And I became even more brand loyal after I heard the How I Built This podcast with Kate and Jack Spade about how they created that company. And I really idolized them. And her death and the information that's come out about the way she was living near the end of her life helped me understand that idolizing people is never helpful, that we can't understand what people who seem to have really charmed existences are living through sometimes. And in that sense of we all have to do better, I think that I'm realizing that even where I think I am in a harmless way, imagining what someone else's life is like, there can be harm in that. Yeah. And I want to be much more careful about that.
I think trying to be much more careful in our language and in our politics and in our capacity to see beyond simple good and bad is a great place to be and a great place to end the show.
Thank you all so much for joining us. We are excited about our episode that's coming up on Tuesday. We have an extensive discussion with Diana Butler Bass, who is the author of 10 books, including Grateful. And she puts forward a very challenging and somewhat radical vision of gratitude as a civic exercise that we think is important, and we cannot wait to share it with you.
We will also be giving away copies of the book Grateful on our social media channel. So if you do not yet follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, get on it because we'll be giving away copies of her book.
So we will look forward to talking with you on social media and on Patreon. And until we are back next Tuesday, keep it nuanced, y'all. We'll be right back.
Pantsuit Politics is produced by Dylan Garvin. Elise Knapp is our production assistant. Support for Pantsuit Politics comes from our listeners. We especially appreciate our executive producers, George Niedermeyer, Tracy Putoff, Nicholas Holland, and Chad Silvers.
Our theme music was written and performed by Dante Lima. To support Pantsuit Politics, please visit patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics. Subscribe and leave a rating and review in the Apple Podcast Player, and follow us on Twitter at Pantsuit Politic and Facebook and Instagram at Pantsuit Politics.